to another podcast brought to you by Team Corker. A few weeks ago, I had the sweet opportunity of attending a retreat put on by our pals at Hysterical in Baja, Mexico. And little did I know that this short retreat would feel like 10 years of therapy in 3 sweet days. Little did I know that therapy could feel like incredible joy, incredible enlightenment, play, wonder, and most of all, personal responsibility. That perhaps the whole essence of therapy is a mirror to ourselves to say, how do we really show up in relationships with partners, perhaps lovers, perhaps in the realm of business, how we show up with family. It's all a beautiful, wild choice. And, you know, we saw semblances of this at Landmark, and I've worked with so many wonderful therapists who I bow to, all of them. Their work has been so incredible. Yet there is just something special about this conversation today. Her name is Dr. Julie Caldwell, whom I now affectionately refer to as Dr. J, the artist formerly known as Dr. J. I hope it sticks. She is a psychologist from Boulder, Colorado. She has studied and worked with every dimension of individual, couple, families. I really love the work that she's done on the queer community to remind us of the differences and similarities among how all folks identify these days. And at the end of the day, we have brains and we are in reaction or we are above the line. And this is a conversation brought to you above the line. There's so much more I can say, but without further ado, in the name of Mercury being in retrograde, this pod took a few takes, and I think we got there. And I really hope you enjoy. From the bottom of my heart, Dr. J, thank you for saying yes. And sweet friends, enjoy.
Dr. J, there is no other way I will ever be able to call you by proper name than Dr. J. I want you to know that your yes meant the whole world to me. And to be able to riff with you on a podcast that we get to share with the world is so special. So thank you for being a yes.
Oh, yeah, my heart's so happy just to sit across from you, Steph, and be engaged in a conversation. So absolutely.
Thank you. I love to begin these. Yes, the intro is my own of you. And then I love to give our guests an opportunity to introduce themselves in your words, phrases, what matters. How do you describe or define yourself in 2024? Who are you, Dr. J?
When we were playing at our workshop together, we got to be speaking from our essence names. So I'm going to answer from that place because I could totally answer from all my personas and, you know, the one that wants to be like, oh, you know, but it's much more fun to say, well, turns out my essence name is La-di-da Star, which is plugged into these other more expanded realms. And so who that part of me is just wanting to play, be with what's happening, be with the unfolding of life, and how can I fully participate and engage? How can I experience my own most aliveness and my deepest connections?
I love that you are so committed to play. And so often I hear that word, you know, whether it was in person in your workshops, in your writing, online, we'll make sure there's a link. Your Instagram page is just a delight to follow. play. And, you know, we're not young spring chickens that actually, you know, quote unquote, play as much as we once upon a time did. And I'm wondering what play looks like for you in life. How do you inject play? How do you make it matter? How do you show up to play?
I was just on my bike, and actually it takes me totally right back to when I'm 10. I was 10 and standing on the pedals. So I didn't stand on my pedals today, though, just noticing that. But yeah. to make it a broader kind of description or experience, play doesn't have to be like, oh, let's just all run around and have fun and just jumping down and up and down. And it doesn't have to look like that. It certainly can, the joyous exuberance of play. But for me, play is much more being with what is. It's more of an improv definition of saying yes to life. So whatever life is dishing up, that I can engage with it and say yes to it instead of be like, no, I don't like that. What do you mean you decided to have me pay another tax bill or whatever? Like, that's more of my experience of stopping life and making it wrong. But the ongoing question of how is this perfect? How can I be with what is? How can I step in and accept life on its own terms? Instead of me deciding it shouldn't be happening. I mean, life is kind of big. I'm like not so big as that. So being willing to step in and engage and relate, co-create with life. So for me, it's a very broad definition of it can be anything. It can be deciding to have a big sob on the floor because that's what's going on. That's what's current for me. Or it can be something that might look or sound more fun.
You know, I need to just share with you on that note, in the name of co-creating, that I live in a small town outside of a city. And in the small mountain town that I live in, my town's much smaller than your mountain town. We don't have to pay for parking here. So you have free street parking because it's a small town. Yet when I go into the city, you do need to pay for parking. And I am notoriously really great at getting parking tickets. And now living in a small town, when I go into the city, I really make an effort to pay for parking. So to not get a ticket.
Not get a ticket. Yeah.
You know what? I went in this week and I paid for parking and the appointment went a little bit longer. And I came out and I had a ticket. And I saw the parking attendants walking down the street doing such a great job as they dutifully do. And I looked back and was like, they just passed my car. That's going to mean I've got a ticket. And the first thought that went through my head was, I got a love note from a sweet human walking down the street. They wrote me a love note. It came out of their little computer pad. It took two of them, in fact. They left it on my windshield to make sure it wouldn't blow away. They really wanted to make sure I got that. It's like twice as expensive as I remember. And I just joyfully was like, I get to pay for being late, for being in the city. And every other moment that I park in my small little mountain town, I don't get parking tickets. And it was just this reframe that brought so much joy to picking up a parking ticket on my windshield. I'm with you.
Right. And those are the moments too. Well, if I could get past my first, if I can roll where you just rolled with it, which is really one of the funnest things for me to do is, whoa, how can I, exactly. I love that you could do all that twirl right in the moment, to start to think, and look what I've paid for with that money. Wow. There's concrete here. I'm not in mud. And it's people are around kind of taking care of things that this is what my money's going towards. Instead of, I shouldn't be playing. It's like, what am I actually supporting with my dollars here?
Yeah.
Which is really pretty remarkable. When you look around, it's like, collectively, this is what we're creating.
Oh, yes. Collectively in a city that we pay for parking. Got it. Okay. We need to go back to where you began though, with your essence name. And so for folks that might not know how we get to our essence, of which mine is Heidi, and we can absolutely riff from Heidi to what are we? La-di-da?
La-di-da. Yeah. My last name is Star with two R's.
La-di-da Star. How did you get there? What does an essence embody, entail? Where did your name come from? And what does that mean for you?
I think in flowcharts and maps. And so I created this inner map. It's straight from David Hawkins' work. So just to give him the full attribution here, mine is simpler. So what I think about is how I'm in reactive brain, how much of the time I'm in my own reactivity because I've perceived there to be a threat, whether or not there is one, I've perceived one, so my body is in a threat response. Versus then when I move through that response and I'm in this more open, expanded state that I think of as creative brain. So my experience of myself and people, I've seen lots and lots of folks over the decades. Many of us relate to ourselves as if all we are people in reactive brain. Like that, and I would think of actually that it's more of our persona selves, but that, like my Julie self, I think can take me straight into my responsible parts of me or my bitchy parts or who knows where that takes me, but it's probably not my best, most expanded self. Mm-hmm. So this idea of relating to myself as if actually anchoring into my most playful, most expanded, even if it's expanded, like I can appreciate what's happening or I can just be accepting or neutral with what's happening. That what that's doing is anchoring me in and doing exactly what you did. I mean, I aspire to that now, Steph. I've got a new, with a parking ticket. How about a speeding ticket? Can I do that? there's an aspiration. Hopefully I won't have to create that, but who knows? that I can start to relate to myself as that's who I really am. I'm really, and you are, and I love walking around and just looking at humans and other beings, but humans as if like, well, they're just little God selves walking around in their bodies. Such a different version of reality than I used to live in, which is like, uh-oh, those people are going to hurt me. That's how I really perceived the world before, as a pretty unfriendly place. But instead, I don't actually believe that about humanity. I think that we're all doing the best we can. We all have this reactive experience because we have to, if we're in these bodies, we got to figure out how to drive and walk around and pay our bills and all that stuff. But we can identify so heavily as if that's who we are. That isn't who we are. We're kind of we're the Heidis. We're the out there being. When we can go into a relaxed state, we're truly our best selves. We're the kind parts of us. We're the open-hearted parts of us. We just over-identify with that other stuff and kind of perceive each other, especially maybe the people closest to us when we just had a fight with them. It's like, ooh, see, that's who we really are. I don't think that's who we really are at all.
Right. It's so beautiful. Okay. You mentioned, you know, in partnership or with someone else, what has been your experience of being committed to la-ti-da in your relationship, if you will? And I ask that maybe from a place of like relationship, your personal like partner, but also in the world of business and in the world, you know, of book publishing and who you choose to partner with in the different components of your life. Because what I get from you, Dr. J, is there's no compartmentalizing la-ti-da. And it's not like she only shows up at the dinner table or she only shows up, you know, and can you play with that for me a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, that sounds fun. What I noticed this last week, because I was traveling and doing all these fun things with you and around other places. And then I sort of sandwiched myself into my schedule on Monday. And this part of me was just mad. Just like, what? No, no. Freedom. I want to do what I want to do. I don't want to do what you're telling me. Your reactive brain is telling you you have to do. So I would say that would be an example of what doesn't work so well is kind of giving up on myself. What my life feels like these days is I've made these commitments. Very specific one I think of is I commit to living above the line, which really means I commit to living from creative brain. I mean, that is a commitment of mine. Now, it doesn't mean I always do at all, but it does mean that you can count on me that if I go into some reactive state and I do my worst behaviors, whatever those are of the moment, I get cold or mean or puddly or whatever it is, that you can count on me that I'm going to find my way back to creative brain. You can just kind of park me over there and just be like, yeah, Julie, we'll talk later. But that's really what it means. So that my decisions that I'm making, my business decisions, my ways of being with my colleagues, my ways of being at home are very much directed from that inner commitment. In fact, to the point, here's an
example? Yeah, of course.
Here's a quick example, business-wise. We've Evolutionary Power Institute is the nonprofit I started, and we've, you know, talk about promotion because, of course, in social media and all the things. So a few weeks ago, I said, okay, here's what I'm suggesting, everybody. What do you think about this as our promotion plan? Because, of course, the strategic plan. Here's a promotion plan. We know we're fully supported. We're leaning into the abundance of life, and we're going to follow what wants to happen and what's the most fun. What do y'all think? So that's our current promotion plan.
Beautiful. I think that the only piece missing in that was like the grounded truth. You kind of look up to the universe and think like, oh, it's a little bit woo-woo. I'm like, heck no, that's the most strategic promotion plan you could possibly present across the table. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Because we're tuning into the feedback, of course. That's part of it. Life is the whatever, the response we get from participants or whatever that is. Life isn't something out there. It's this constant feedback coming in. But to be tuned into it and to see it as this friendly experience instead of, uh-oh, we're on the wrong track. More like, huh, okay. Again, what wants to happen from all of this?
Right. Okay, what I wanted to jump in, and I'm sorry for almost interrupting you there, was there's a deep sense of personal responsibility in your language. And there's a deep sense that I get as I'm listening to you around, I might dip into reactive brain and it's my job to come back to creative brain. It's my job to renew my commitment to living above the line. Where did that come from? How do you practice it? How do we stay in that work, Dr. J?
Over and over. Well, I want to shout out to my mentors, Gay and Kathleen Hendricks, because that's who I worked with for a long time to learn from, and their concept of taking 100% responsibility, which when I first heard it was like, wait, I have no idea what you mean. I tended to take way more, or of course, way less. And then I'd go into some big victim experience of life is happening at me and there's nothing I can do about it. Somebody could make an argument for that, like that's just how it is. But I sure wasn't happy from that experience. What I learned over and over, like how many times have I taught myself? I mean, just from the experience of it, that the more responsibility I take, meaning responsibility as being able to respond, when I can do that, that every time is taking me back into my own power, my own sense of agency. And I'm here instead of, well, something's happening and there's nothing I can do about it. Right. So to the point, if there's, you know, there's a piece of trash on the ground and like, who put that piece of trash? Like, who dropped that? Those people. And I have that little dialogue or monologue in my head. It's like, oh no, Julie, you saw it. If that's an issue, pick it up. I'm responsible. Right. It's like, can I respond to what's in front of me? And then I feel good. Feel that sense of power.
Oh, I love that. That is a deep and beautiful sense of power. I want to ask a question about your relationship, and I hold the space for you to say no thanks, Steph.
Oh, sure.
And that is, what is it like to be, first question, Julie, what is it like to be in relationship with you? With someone who takes 100% responsibility, with someone who is up for being in this work. And the next question is, how did you bring your whole self to your relationship in co-creating the dynamic that you now have? Because of course, that's been an evolution as well.
What I teach is what I learned. And I always hope that other people will learn faster than me. I'm really hoping, because that was kind of a long and difficult process. So my wife and I have been together for 36 years. So we've had lots of time to hit the rumble strips of the highway and then kind of go off into the ditch and then find our way back again. And so what's it like now is way different from what it was like before. So we'll do a little before, after. I'd be blaming and, well, how come you do that? I can't believe it, and be critical. I was raised in that. That's good to be critical. I really thought that was helpful.
Right.
I was supposed to be I'm going to give you a little help here and tell you what you did wrong. So the before version of me was, I was blamey and, critical, and then I would go into some sort of withdrawal. I frankly had no idea how to do relationships. It's sad, Drew. Anyway, now 36
something
years
tells
later,
me you weren't alone in the world, though. I mean,
it's in a little common. Now, in general, and I've worked pretty hard at changing this, and I can do this almost all the time, not quite all. If Kathy tells me no, I say okay. Or if she says this is what I want, I say okay. I mean, there are a lot of yeses, a lot of me accepting what is. I'm still able to talk about what I want and step into what I want. And so the question is very present for me of how can we both get everything we want? And that's the ongoing experience when we're kind of navigating the world is what is each of our impulses? And then how can we both get everything we want? So it's very fun to see what unfolds from that.
Yeah. Well, I love that you spoke about conscious community and the power of being in a place with people where we're speaking the same language, where we do hold the same commitments, where we acknowledge what 100% responsibility is, where we acknowledge when we're in reactive brain and the time it takes to transition to above the line, to our essence. And I honor that we come into relationship not all having, spoiler, the same past or having done all of the same work. And so was this a journey of doing work alongside of one another? Was this one person leading, dare I say, a charge? How did that unfold for the two of you, if I can ask?
Of course, you can ask anything you want. It really was a co-creation looking back, because I found this book called Conscious Loving. I read it. I asked her to read it, which is one of those things I'm sure I've created lots of resistance in the past. Hey, honey, read this book. But for whatever reason, she read it. And then we were having a fight and she was the one that used it, which kind of threw me like, oh, wait, she really is doing this. Now I'm in trouble. But then I started training and then she stepped into the same training. I think when I see people in relationship and how much struggle we all can create with that, it really helps to have the same language, to just decide this is our language. This is what we're going to use. And that happened for the two of us. We stepped in to say, I'm not sure we ever sat down and say, we're doing this, but we're both speaking not Swahili. We're both using English. That very much helps. As you're trying to navigate, or you're playing the same game, might be a better analogy there. What are the rules here? And so one of the big rules was stop blaming, shift out of blame into appreciation over and over and over, to step into appreciation, let go of the blame, and then to get down to what's really true, not what my mind is generating, but what's going on in my body. And those two things have just led to things really opening up between us.
Well, my heart bursts because it feels like play in so many other places in life when that's possible. Like, what else is possible? How good are you willing to feel? You come to me and declare what you want, and I get to say yes, and I get to tell you what I want. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes.
I feel the dopamine. That yes comes with that chemical reaction that feels good.
I just want to add in some oxytocin too, because now we get to feel connected and relational. And so that's a lovely experience too. So let's get it all the good stuff.
Yes. I'm hitting the pause button on this sweet episode to tell you about something that you might like. Our newsletter, we call it The Corkboard. It has all things juicy, whether you are looking to keep in touch between episodes or find out more about our coaching, development, or hot new jobs that we're working on. The link is in our show notes. Your inbox is sacred and your time is too. So now let's get back to the episode. Okay, I could go on the, oxy high dopamine hits. Let's go. And we hold that there's another side that makes the oxy and the dope feel so good. And it comes a little bit full circle to, you mentioned the Hendrix. I think these are six questions from one of Gay's pieces of literature. We'll include the link below. Yet of the six, infamous question number 4 feels like it was a bit of a chiropractic adjustment for you to shift. And question number 4 is, what are you getting out of being stuck? And how do you relate to that question? Or was there a time in your life that you needed to be with that question to help you get above the line? I don't want to put any words in your mouth. I sit on that question and, that question does not give me a hit of dopamine. That question, it makes me squiggle in my seat. I'm like, oh, right. What am I getting out of being stuck?
Right, right. When I first heard that question, which was Kathy asking me in the middle of this fight, I remember was first like, what? And then second, like, this sense of curiosity. So that was the visceral experience for me of, there's something I don't know here. I felt huge relief that I thought the way I was seeing it was all there was.
Right.
Which was right, wrong, win, lose. One of us needed to, overpower the other one. I thought that's reality. That was reality. And then to think that there was this whole other realm that I had no idea about was, of course, it's kind of scary, but also exhilarating to start to imagine there's something else going on that I didn't know, but was totally impacting what was going on between us.
Oh, cool. Do you come back to this, or do you feel like you have a new relationship with stuck that you're not really stuck anymore?
Well, yes, I do get stuck. I do come back to this. I'd say, generally speaking, the question I ask myself is, how am I creating this right now? What am I doing that's creating this? The stuck question is still around, although probably it's not quite as easy for me to go there as you're asking. Like, oh yeah, that's a good one, but a little harder. Like you said, a little more gritchy. But the how am I creating this in the moment? I love that so much because I know all the ways you're creating it or they're creating it because I've got my clipboard full of those. But if I can fill my clipboard with all the things that I'm doing right now, I love to do this with couples that are coming in right after a fight and I'm like, yeah, because they didn't and she isn't and he never. And, okay, fine. And I hand them each a pad and say, now write down everything you did that created that fight. And they could sit down and give me 20 things that they did. It's not like it's a mystery to them. Well, I iced them out. Well, I didn't say what was true. Well, I started talking even though I should have been going to bed. Like they know what they did. But that's gold to be able to say, so next time I'm going to go to bed instead, or I'm going to actually tell the truth. Like it gives me an action plan forward. So yeah, those kind of questions, it's about me. It's not about you, even though I want to make it about you. What is it I'm doing? What's going on for me unconsciously that I don't have access to? Am I willing to find that? Because when I do, it's gold. It's power.
Yeah. Gold. You've said this a few times and I was trying to find the right way to come into it. It just feels like now is the moment, which is your relationship with time. So what I just love, you hand people their pad and it takes no time to write these things out. And then you're like, great. And so next time you're not going to do one of those things. You also have spoke, in our workshop shared about the power of years of physical pain, feeling some relief in being able to express emotions differently. And so this is a stuck question that's not quite about number four, kind of stuck. Okay. I think that as humans, we can be stuck in, this is going to take a lot of time. We're stuck in, this has happened. Point. This has been a repeating pattern. It's going to happen again, Julie. I have all the evidence. Nitty. What is your relationship with time? And as a therapist in the work, how do you dance with time when people can so easily, I want to say, be stuck in this sense of it's going to take a long time, or time feeling heavy instead of the buoyancy that I think it really can and should deserve?
Well, can we appreciate Mercury for a moment, though? Mercury Please. Does seem to like clean out the crap, and if something needs to be broken, it probably could break now. And there must be something in it.
Okay. Beautiful. Well, we had a Mercury moment, and we're going to jump right back to the moment of discussing Dr. J's relationship with time and perhaps unpacking one of your many sweet gold nuggets that you shared, was that not all things have to take a long time, feel as arduous as we make them feel. Can you riff on that for me, Dr. J?
Yes. I think of us as walking around looking at the sky, and much of the time, at least in Boulder, like today, the sun is out. Other times the clouds come through, of course, and we get so confused because it seems like the sun is gone, that we'll never see it again. And I think in relationships, it can really look like that. Like, I was in love with you once and I'm not in love anymore. And that just happened. And I don't even know how it happened, versus, oh, really? All that happened was the clouds covered up the sun. And it doesn't take a lot of time to find the sun. It's there. It's there all along. So it's really about, am I willing to open to it? Can I move myself through the cloudy, contracted energy and find that part of me again so that I can see that part in you? Because that's why I can't see it in you, because I'm still all cluttered up in my own density. But when I can move past that, through that, well, oh, turns out there you are. So no, that doesn't have to take long at all. In fact, one of my thrills in doing this for a long time is being with a couple and they walk in like, things are terrible and we don't like each other anymore and we're contemplating divorce. And then by the end, really, literally, I've seen this many, many times. by the end of the hour, oh, I remember me. Oh, wait, there you are. And I ask people to tune in. Can you see the person you fell in love with? And they can. Like, they didn't go away. Can you remember what it felt like to be that person? So that can happen quickly. If people, I'm not that faster is better, but it does not have to take a long time. It might take a while to build the skills to be able to keep accessing that. But in terms of being able to get there, no, it doesn't take time at all. It doesn't have to.
Oh, I love that. I also need to ask you your relationship with 15 minutes, because I want to create a timer that says I'm up for talking about anything for 15 minutes and then I need to change. And then I need to look at my worksheet that says, here are all of the other options I can do to inject play into my life and not continue a crunchy conversation. Where does 15 minutes come from? What is 15 minutes?
Well, I gave that to myself and then started suggesting that to folks that if you haven't sorted through an issue in 15 minutes, just stop. Because people want to keep talking, and often it's one person, maybe not the other person in the relationship. No, we can't go to bed. No, we have to figure this out and we have to keep talking about it. One couple I saw, they kept talking about it for 10 hours. It's like, whoa, wait a second. But if you imagine this idea, and we think Einstein said it, but we're not really sure. A problem cannot be solved from the same state of consciousness in which it was created. So then we're just digging the hole deeper and deeper. These days, I'd actually go shorter. I'd say five minutes. If things are not better in 5 minutes, then you need to shift your state. You need to get up and move around and take a walk and stand on your head or do something. Take a nap, get a drink of water, do anything to shift your physiology, because things will not get better if you don't do that. The mind itself is going to keep going down that same path, and the mind does not wish the best for you, that reactive brain. So get yourselves into a different state and then things can happen. We can get back into flow.
I love that. So you mentioned Einstein. We also have, we'll ensure there's lots of, links to books and, credit where credit is due, David Hawkins. I'm wondering, Dr. J, who do you look to today, and not necessarily from even a learning perspective, more from an inspirational perspective? Where do you see beauty? Where do you see inspiration in today's day and age of all things social and whatnot? Being, you're so scholarly and, dare I say, academic in so many ways, and yet you're so playful. And I'm like, your right brain is just spewing glitter. What inspires your right brain?
First, I want to say that might be the best thing anybody's ever told me. If I can spew glitter from my right brain, that's the best. I've reached my pinnacle. So first, I want to appreciate the time we're in, because we are laden. We're like a fruit tree that's just laden with these beautiful apples and pomegranates, like with teachers. We've got teachers all over the place, and to the point like of something like Instagram, or where we each are becoming the teachers, which that's just mind blowing to me, that we're so much trying to teach each other how to live in a more expanded place and way. So just whoa, way to go, humanity. We're doing it right now. Of course, not in all the ways. I just want to acknowledge that. I don't mean to overstate that, but to really notice what it is and how we're surrounded by this deep, this great bench. If you think about, baseball, and you want a really great deep bullpen. Well, we are there. We have so many people to listen to and hear and talk about. So in terms of my own inspiration, it probably is not what people are thinking about. I mean, I certainly read that.
Ask.
Yeah, it's probably much more about what people are creating and how I can remember my own creativity, where I want to spend my time and attention. There's that one feeling. I don't know if you get it. Do you? I'm kind of plugging along and then, Oh, I forgot. Mm-hmm. I forgot life could feel like that. I totally felt that with you and with our time together. Aww. Like, oh yeah. Ah, this. So
yeah,
I think for me, it's finding those experiences and being aware of those experiences so that I can fully embody that other possibility, because it's so easy for me to kind of go back to kind of slogging through versus, oh no, life is open and expanded and full of possibility.
Oh, I love it. As you say that, I want to ask a question a layer deeper that says, do you have a daily practice, Dr. J, that a daily practice, or is there a ritual? Is there something that you are consciously doing to remind yourself of possibility?
Yes. In fact, I'd make a list, and sometimes I follow my list and sometimes I don't. But the top activity on my list is meditation. I know when I don't do it, like the rest of the day, I just know something's off. Now, I'm not somebody who's how do I want to put this? I love guided meditations. So going into that place of openness and emptiness, I do that some, but what I really love, I just want to thank Sarah Blondin. I love listening to her, because going with her, I go to these, she starts us where we were, and then I end up where I could be over and over and over. So that would be a typical practice for me. Also then starting the day with other things. You asked about inspiration. I'm currently using Gay Hendricks' leap year. I can't remember he just put out a book.
Oh, but I'll tell you. It's called Your Big Leap Year.
Oh, Your Big Year. Is that the one? Yes, that's the one. So a daily practice from the Big Leap Year, because of all of, I adore him. I adore everything he's ever written. Katie as well. But I just eat up his writing. And so that's what I'm doing, is using that as a daily practice. And then I read about creativity, and I do creative things when I could kind of get myself out of my anxious body into, I am going to play with watercolors right now. So anything that feels that going into that direction, and then getting out and walking and being in nature is top on there too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, beautiful. I just need to share that my heart skipped a beat when you said you have a list, because I've never met a list I didn't love deeply, deeply. And I've wrestled with that. And I thought, you know, oh, if only I could be a little bit, you know, less listy, maybe I'd be better. And then instead, I actually, of course, went all in on lists. And my little nugget is that I used to call them to-do lists. And then I would make a quadrant on a page in my Moleskine of most important and least important and most joyful. And things really shifted when I wrote at the top my ta-da list. And all of a sudden, everything on this list felt like I would cross it off and say, ta-da. And maybe it's the moment of dopamine. Okay. It's like oxytocin with self, Julie. It's like this connection of whatever the something is. And some of the time, baking cookies ends up on a to-do list, because I know it actually feels like ta-da, and it will actually fill my heart in such a way that I don't know. I just don't know how else to tell you. And it's not something that I would talk about usually on a podcast or tell many folks. But when you mention that, you know, a daily practice is worthy of a list, and it's worthy of keeping track of, you matter. It's not just all of these other things, quote unquote, we're going to do for all these other people in our day, you know, whether it's pay our taxes and pay our parking tickets. I share that. It renovated my relationship with being so passionately obsessed with lists and considering them all magic moments.
Lovely. And I'm thinking that might be for Heidi, you know, your essence part of you, like that might be just who you are, that's something organizing but then to add in the ta-da, that what I hear in that too is you're available to fully celebrate yourself. And like, whoa, to really appreciate and go back to this moment of, oh, look, this is what I can feel like. This is me in the world. Yeah. I celebrate me. And yeah, I think we can give those dopamine things, you know, that stuff. We can say there's something wrong with that versus understanding it's how we're designed. And yay, mm-hmm. that we've got all that it's stuck in there so that we can go on the right track. Because that sounds like a lovely track to be on, to have that kind of celebration of you.
Mm, thank you. I just need to tell you that when you replace the O in to-do with an A, ta-da, it makes me feel like you jumped to the front of the alphabet and you're already ahead.
Yeah, sha-sha.
You know, A before O, let's go. That's the poem.
Now you got a whole cheer. You need pom-poms, Steph.
Dr. J, that is definitely how I feel. I need pom-poms for my love of lists. You know, I was on a bike ride the other morning with a group of friends, and one of them has a young one. She's an adorable little 18-month-old. And she described her 18-month-old walking out in the world as a joy tornado. Oh. And I just thought that was the coolest. Oh. I almost cried. She said, "It's impossible for you to not smile when you witness my joy tornado walking down the street toward you." And her little one, like I said, is 18 months. And I just want you to know that being in your presence, I suppose in your essence, for a workshop really felt like a joy tornado. It felt like it stirred up stuck. It felt like it created a new way. You absolutely instilled the power of 100% responsibility. And I left thinking, no, I left believing the power of having human connections with joy tornadoes could really make a dent on our hearts and our lives. And I'll never be able to say thank you. That I can just tell you thanks really for being a joy tornado.
Oh, I have tears. My heart's blasting and open, and my whole body feels warm and vibrating right now to hear that. Like, what could be better than that? What could be better?
Well, what can be better? That the only thing that can be better is links below. I'm going to tell you a promotion called Get to Conscious Community with Dr. J. I will make sure your LinkedIn links are below, as well, of course, as, you know, websites and the like. I've never, ever, ever believed more deeply the power of conscious community and us all speaking the same version of whatever language it is, whether it is English or Swahili. So that is very true. And I must ask you our final question, which is, what is making your heart beat faster right now in this moment?
So my aspiration every day is to live in impeccable integrity. So I'll say it again, live in impeccable integrity, knowing that then life can sweep me down my perfect path. So I have a sense of being in a river. Now around here in the Rockies, the rivers are running fast and cold right now. And so being in that rushing river of life and being in the full aliveness of the experience of the unknown, that makes my heart beat fast.
Wow. Wow. Well, here's to rushing rivers. Here's to the beautiful Rockies that you live in. Here's to making a dent on all of our hearts, making our hearts beat faster. And may all timers from 10 hours come down to 15 minutes and maybe even 5 minutes. And most of all, may we relate to one another from our essence.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, I so appreciate being here today with you, Steph. It's really just glorious. Thank you.
Oh, hey, before you go, you know, listening to podcasts on this thing called the internet, it's a wild ride. And what would be so helpful on our wild journey is if you would be so kind to jump on and give us a review. 4, maybe even 5 stars. It really helps. Thanks for joining us.